mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the discussion over the influx of Haitian immigrants in Ohio has spilled over into Findlay, prompting Mayor Christina Mern to pen an open letter addressing many of the questions and suspicions around our city's growing population of foreign nationals and the strain on local resources that comes with it. But not everyone agrees with the mayor's handling of the issue. State Representative John Cross is among those who advocate a different, stronger response. Also this morning, there are more than 60 active wildfires in the U.S., with more than 7 million acres burned this year alone. Even though this isn't something we normally consider a threat here, it can happen anywhere, and it serves as a reminder to keep your insurance protection up to date. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, September 16, 2024. Have to apologize right out off the bat. Because my voice is a little rough this morning. I think I probably yelled at the TV too much yesterday. Yelled at the TV a little too much. As you know, I am a Cincinnati Bengals fan, and so obviously things did not go well. Browns won yesterday, so kudos to Cleveland and, you know, evening up their record after that opening week loss. But the Bengals, not so lucky against Kansas City. And I'm not even going to go into it because I'll get all upset again, but it's another slow start for my Bengals. So anyway, I was yelling at the TV yesterday, and I think that was what did it. I'm a little rough here this morning. We will muddle through nonetheless. Just to apologize up front and thank you for bearing with me as we kind of work this out. It's one of those things. Again, I don't feel bad. I'm not ill. I don't have a cold, anything like that. Just my voice a little strained here this morning. Big news from over the weekend. And among the first things you need to know this morning, the Toledo Zoo reported the birth of 10 baby rhinoceros vipers. Baby rhinoceros vipers. I don't know that you're going to see any cute YouTube videos about these baby animals. Handlers say this is the first time this species of snake has been born at the Toledo Zoo, and it is one of the very few litters produced by any accredited institution in the past decade. So this is fairly rare. They say these births will help further the long-term sustainability of the rhinoceros viper species. I don't know what that is. I have not looked it up, but that just does not sound like a reptile that I would want to come into close contact with. You know what I mean? Rhinoceros vipers. No, thank you. I think I'll pass. But it is good news, I guess, for wildlife experts there. Kudos to the Toledo Zoo. COVID cases in Ohio have remained steady this week. We're getting into that time of the year when we start to get updates on cold and flu and COVID season. The CDC reports that there were more than 10,000 new cases of COVID reported this week across Ohio this past week. But that is almost exactly the same number as last week. The past 2 weeks, it says here, have been the first times in several months that COVID rates in Ohio have not significantly increased week over week. And of those 10,000 new cases, there were 26 deaths related to COVID this past week, nearly 300 hospitalizations. So this is still not something you really want to mess around with. I mean, if you can avoid it. I mean, it's not the, you know, fearful diagnosis that it once was, certainly, but that doesn't mean it's not something you don't want to take seriously. We're still talking about hospitalizations and more than 24 deaths here, so it's something we want to take seriously. It is not insignificant, I guess, the way to put that. More Ohio news here. The Department of Education and Workforce in the state of Ohio has made the latest school district report cards available. The annual evaluations rate each of the state's more than 600 public school systems and cover six specific categories. They use six specific categories to come up with the star ratings. Findlay City Schools, in case you're interested, earn 4 out of 5 stars overall, so not too shabby. You can get details on each district in the state at education.ohio.gov. So if you are interested in that, you can look it up and find out where your district ranks. But overall, the Findlay City Schools, pretty well. The latest report cards. And a couple of other items here among the first things you need to know this morning. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Ohio ranking fairly high on a list that I'm not sure we necessarily want to be on. California actually ranks first in a list of states that are most obsessed with violent video games. Most obsessed states with violent video games. The tech review site CloudWords conducted a study comparing the average number of Google searches in each state for violent video games, such as Call of Duty, Mortal Kombat, Grand Theft Auto, etc., etc. So you're familiar with some of these titles. California was number one. New York took second. Maryland, Alabama, and Ohio rounding out the top five. So Ohio number five on that list of states most obsessed with violent video games. Now again, this is Google searches for these games. That doesn't necessarily mean that everybody in Ohio is playing these games. That's a whole different thing. But it was kind of interesting. Wyoming and North Dakota were at the bottom of the list. And the story goes on to say studies have shown that frequent exposure to violent video games can lead to increased violent behavior. But anyway, it's just something. I don't know that we want to necessarily get overly concerned about this, but it is probably something that should be on our radar screen if you are a parent. And be aware that Ohio among the top states for violent video games. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know this morning. Of course, one of the big news stories today, and folks will be talking about it, apparently another assassination attempt on former President Trump over the weekend. This time at his golf course. What is the golf course? Was it at Mar-a-Lago? One of his golf courses. He was playing golf, and ahead of him, apparently the Secret Service, his protection detail was a few holes ahead of him, which I would imagine is standard. They walk up on ahead to make sure that there is nothing dangerous, no threats to the president, and they found one. There was a guy with a rifle apparently looking to take the former president out, and they arrested the guy, and so he is now in custody. The president is just fine. He is safe. But it's a second attempt, apparent attempt, on the former president's life in just the past month or so. So, good to see that, again, this latest threat was neutralized. But, man, it is crazy. And I thought it was kind of interesting because this was supposed to be the big story today involving President Trump. I'm assuming that he will still, that this is still planned. The former president launching his cryptocurrency platform today. you know about this? You can now invest in Trump-branded cryptocurrency. The Donald said in a video posted to X that he is embracing the future with crypto. And his new cryptocurrency is, I guess, being sold through a new financial platform, a new business called World Liberty Financial. The launch will happen at 8 p.m. Eastern Time this evening. 8 p.m. And it has also been advertised by the former president as I don't know when it goes on sale. It says here the launch will happen at 8 p.m. He's going to give a speech, but I don't know if that is the official launch, whether you'd be able to buy the cryptocurrency through the course of the day today. I don't know when it officially goes on sale, but he will make a speech at 8 p.m. Eastern time tonight on X. It has also been advertised by Mr. Trump as a state of the crypto address. So if you want to invest in Donald Trump cryptocurrency, now you will finally get your chance. There you go. I don't know how that will work if he wins the election. I mean, that would seem to be something that would he have to divest that? It would have to place it in a receipt. It's another really interesting business venture by the former president that could cause problems if he were to win back the presidency. I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see how all of that plays out if indeed he does win in November. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Sunny today with a high in the mid-80s, mostly clear tonight, a low in the mid-50s. The Findlay Police Department says a man was shot outside the Old Stony Ledge Bar at 752 Howard Street. While responding to the location, officers were advised that a man had been shot once and that the suspect had fled the scene. When officers arrived in the area, they located the 39-year-old suspect in the area of College Street and Fox Street. The suspect ran through some yards and was eventually stopped by an officer in front of a residence in the 600 block of College Street and taken into custody. He was booked at the Hancock County Jail on charges of felonious assault and obstructing official business. The victim suffered a gunshot wound to his face and was taken to Blanchard Valley Hospital by private vehicle, and he was then transported by Life Flight to OSU Hospital for further treatment. Get more details in the story on our website. A controversial landfill expansion in Seneca County is moving forward.
The Ohio Environmental Protection Agency approved permits. Officials say the Fostoria landfill, Sunny Farms, is expanding by 218 acres. They say there have been more than 150 inspections from local and state officials, but no enforceable actions have been taken since the beginning of the year. Fostoria's mayor says there is a 30-day appeals process in effect to see if anyone does appeal those permits.
WTOL 11's Melissa Andrews reporting. It's Spirit Week in Findlay City Schools, and the Findlay High School Homecoming Court has been announced. You can see a picture of the court in this story on our website. The school district says the Homecoming Court and all students in Trojan Country will be celebrated this week during Spirit Week. The school district is also inviting the community to participate in Spirit Week by joining in the fun by painting their windows blue and gold or participating in an event. The Homecoming Parade will be Friday at 5:30. The Homecoming Football game will kick off at 7 o'clock. And right before kickoff, the Homecoming King and Queen will be crowned. See a picture of the Homecoming Court in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, check the calendar. There are 50 days until Election Day as of today, and it is a tight race for president, even tighter than one might think in Ohio, given the fact that the Buckeye State has been so reliably red in recent years. In case you missed it, on Friday, the chairman of the Ohio GOP, Alex Triantafilou, joined us ahead of his address at the Hancock County Republicans' first Friday luncheon on Friday afternoon. And of course, we began our conversation by addressing the statements that Donald Trump made in last week's debate about the challenges being faced in the community of Springfield. So much has been made of President Trump's comments about Springfield. Was that really helpful to amplify those conspiracy theories to the point where it seemed as though that sort of overshadowed some of those high points for the president?
Well, so I see it differently. I really do. And here's why I see it differently. We have now been talking about the Haitian immigration crisis here in Ohio, right in Clark County. In his own very unique way, Donald Trump now has created a national conversation about what happens when 20,000 Haitian immigrants descend upon a community of 60,000 people in, you know, essentially rural Ohio. So, you know, in that way, let the chatter go on about what's going on in Springfield, because we should shine the light of day on what's happening there, because it's hurting Ohioans and hurting people in Clark County.
I get exactly what you're saying. This is an important issue. We need to address the problem of illegal immigration, but is this the right way to shine that light? I mean, there is a significant number, even within the Republican Party, who are pointing to this and saying this is exactly why we have trouble supporting Donald Trump for president.
Yeah, no, I see that differently. And the point for me is this. If Donald Trump or any Republican, really, let's take the president out of the mix for a minute, and said, well, there's a problem in Springfield, Ohio, with immigrants coming there from Haiti, the whole world would have probably listened for a couple minutes and then moved on to the next topic. There are some things that have gone on there that are just, you know, have created challenges for the community. So by highlighting some of those things, again, we are talking about the crisis in Haiti in a way that we weren't before. So, you know, look, President Trump, we know what we have with him. He and I, obviously, I'm a huge fan, maybe his biggest fan in Ohio, but I recognize, as others do, that he's an unconventional, non-career politician. So is he always going to be perfectly politically correct? No. Is he going to say things sometimes that are unconventional? Of course, but a lot of us love that about him. And I got to tell you, I like where he is in Ohio.
Findlay Mayor Christina Mern is with us now on the line. She's been a little under the weather here the past couple of days, so just on the phone this morning as she tries to recover. Here's hoping that you're feeling much better very soon. But thank you very much taking the time. Nonetheless, we heard some comments earlier from the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party, Alex Tarantafilou, who spoke to the Hancock County Republicans' First Friday Luncheon last week. And we asked about the comments that Donald Trump made at last week's debate, where he highlighted the Haitian immigrant issues in the city of Springfield, Ohio, and how this went viral. And he offered the perspective, he offered the spin, that this is a way of highlighting a problem that otherwise would not have been talked about, and that there are significant issues in the community of Springfield. I am curious as to whether you see it that same way.
Well, you know, I think that it's beneficial to have a national conversation about immigration and that the challenges that some of the national policies are having on our local communities, because mayors are the ones on the ground floor having to figure out how we manage our communities and do so, you know, in a responsible way, but also in a humanitarian way as well, when we have people from other nations coming to our communities. Unfortunately, I don't think that the way that it's been brought up is appropriate or beneficial, because I think it's been very divisive. And you know, I would have really liked to have seen a message of these are folks that are fleeing really horrible situations, and mm-hmm. we need to, as a nation, figure out a way to support them, because we're a nation of immigrants. But the policies right now are not something that I think are beneficial. So I think that would have been a better approach to the divisiveness that has really occurred over the last week and a half.
So the narrative that started with the issues centered around Springfield, which is just outside of Dayton, further south, have spilled over into communities such as Findlay. And in a similar respect to the situation in Springfield, we also have seen an influx of immigrants from Haiti and elsewhere. This is not the first time that this has come up, but the issues, you actually penned a letter, an open letter last week, addressing many of the questions and suspicions around that growing population of foreign nationals. And you were quick to point out that the issues that we face are significantly different than what they are seeing in Springfield.
Yes. So I did want to just continue to clarify, you know, over the last 2 years, I've talked on this topic multiple times, and I think it's important to continue to note that, you know, folks are here through a federally approved process, whether we agree or disagree with that. At the local level, it's federally approved, and therefore these individuals are here legally. Two, we're not seeing rampant crime. We're not seeing rampant disease. We're not seeing people eating, you know, animals that they shouldn't be eating. Mm-hmm. And we're not seeing a negative impact to our community. Are we seeing some challenges associated with folks living in a hotels because they can't find additional housing? Are we seeing challenges because of language barriers? Yes. But those are challenges that I think we can really turn into good opportunities and figure out how we manage. Now, Springfield, as I talk to their city leadership, and we've been in communications over the last 2 years, I think they would say the same thing. But because they have had such a larger scale, let such a larger amount that have come to their community, it's obviously also put a significant strain on their city services, you know, responding to calls for service with the language barrier. You know, the driving safety is certainly a challenge. But, you know, again, they're here legally through a process that I have no control over. So how do I recognize that these are folks that are looking for an opportunity to make a better life for themselves? And I have no legal course, do I think that would necessarily be the right thing to do, to go around and kick people out. I've heard from many of our businesses and other community members and different community churches that have gotten to know our Haitian population and, you know, are really pleased with the contributions they're making to our communities, how they're engaging in the community. And so I think that I don't think that the rhetoric around anti-immigration is a good message for our nation to have.
So let me ask for more details on a couple of points that you raised. First of all, you point out that the individuals who have located into the city of Findlay in our area are here legally. How do we know that they are all here legally, and what percentage may not be here under those legal programs? Again, whether we agree or disagree with the federal program, you point out that there is a federal program that allows them to be here legally, but how many do we know that have actually formally taken advantage of that program?
Yeah, so you make a great point, and I've reiterated that a couple times. I cannot say that every single person here has proper legal status, but our law enforcement, anyone that we've interacted with, when I'm talking to nonprofit organizations, they have parameters around who they support. You know, if somebody comes in and is looking for assistance in filling out forms to get housing, different things like that, they have to have proper legal status. You know, individuals enrolling in school, they have to show proper legal status. In getting a job, you have to go through E-Verify. So I'm confident that a lot of the folks that are here do have proper legal status. And another thing is, with some of the policies at the federal level, it has created a easier process to come into the country legally, whether it is temporarily or longer term. Under federal policy, if you come in and are discovered as undocumented or having illegal status in the United States, you are not ever eligible then for other immigration status. You're right. I can't say with 100% certainty that every single person here is here legally, but what we are seeing, especially among the Haitian population because of the temporary protected status, are here legally, and therefore then many of them are also able to work.
You also mentioned that this is not creating a big influx. We're not seeing a big influx in crime. It's not creating an issue with crime locally. Again, you're basing that on the information that you're getting from local law enforcement, because again, people are sharing anecdotal evidence that would say otherwise.
Correct. I'm getting it from actual facts from our law enforcement, all the cases. I get a daily report of all activity. Our team is keeping me posted, certainly. You know, I think that there is a lot of rumors, speculation, statements online, and I would reiterate to folks, if there's something that you see occurring that you don't think should be occurring, you need to call law enforcement. If somebody is trespassing on somebody's property or they're making you uncomfortable and you think that there is nefarious activity occurring, you need to report it to law enforcement. I think, unfortunately, there is a lot of rumors and statements on social media that are being propagated that are not necessarily correct, or are maybe folks just that are feeling uncomfortable, but there's not really a threat to their safety. And so, you know, we certainly are paying very close attention to it, and folks need to make sure that they're reporting things if they say, think something is going on. But when we look at the actual data, when I talk to our police officers, when I look at our calls for service, when I look at actual cases opened, we are not seeing an increase in crime.
I also thought it was kind of interesting. One of the reasons it was brought up that one of the reasons why the city of Springfield has seen such a large influx of immigrant population is because, number one, there are a number of jobs. The jobs in that community are plentiful, and housing is more plentiful and more affordable. This is something, those are two things that many communities strive for, but it does have this other impact. So I guess I'm wondering, is there a balancing act to creating all of these, having a big increase in the number of jobs available, having a big increase in affordable housing, things that we all want, but it also comes along with some of these challenges that we're talking about?
Yeah, when you're managing a community, there's always a balance to it. I also think that there was some other things that they did out of good-naturedness. They had a couple of nonprofit organizations that I think created an easy path for folks to come to their community, and that caused probably some additional challenges at this point in time. And so when we look at how we're managing it, we want to be a place that helps folks assimilate and takes a, creates an environment where they're not a burden to our community, but we're also not necessarily trying to say, hey, you know, we want a bunch more people coming here, because we do have to protect our community and make sure that it's a manageable thing. You know, we definitely have a demand for affordable housing before we saw our immigrant population coming here. We definitely, you know, have great jobs, and we need to continue to find workforce. I think that there is some benefit that immigrants provide to that. When we look at the national birth rates, death rates, workforce, we're going to need to figure out immigration in, in an organized fashion to help continue to grow our economy, because we are seeing you know, we're going to see some challenges over the next couple of years if we don't look at both automation and finding new workforce. So it is a balance, but again, I don't see our community being one where we're going to continue to see a significant increase. I would also note that the temporary protected status is a temporary measure that currently goes, I believe, through 2026. So I also don't see this as a longer-term issue. I think Congress needs to step up. They've been kicking this can for decades down the road and not really making meaningful changes to our immigration policy. And I, you know, am frustrated that now state and federal and, you know, legislators and officials are using it as a political talking point when they have then also spoke against meaningful reform that has been proposed. And I think it wasn't perfect, but people need to stop putting kind of politics in front of good policy and get some things done.
We will leave it there. May not be the last time we discuss this issue, but again, it is important perspective to have. Again, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern with us this morning. Mayor Mern, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Yep, have a good rest of your Monday.
As we mentioned, not everyone agrees with the mayor's perspective on the local immigration situation or how her administration is managing the issue. State Representative John Cross is with us in the studio this morning. And Mr. Cross, thanks very much for taking the time. Yeah. We appreciate it. Not long after the mayor released her open letter on Friday that we were just talking about a moment ago, you responded on social media saying, "I respectfully disagree."
Yeah.
What? With what? What part of that do you disagree with?
Well, I feel the mayor obviously has to deal with an accommodation plan, and the frustration part is that we've known about this for the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. I think it really has come to light during the presidential campaign. Rightly so, because people can actually fix this issue, the immigration issue, mm-hmm. with a choice of who they want to lead as president in November. So I've actually, in the last week, I've had members of council ask me what can the state do to address this. I've had a number of constituents call as they're learning more, because I've talked to Sheriff Heldman and other members of law enforcement 12 mm-hmm. months ago, even in Kenton, Ohio. There's companies that are have migrant workers, and it has been a concern for the city. The mayor is obviously trying to address this as accommodation plan, but my concern is that this is really labor trafficking, modern day labor trafficking, and the way it's structured, the way the federal government has it set up, how does Findlay not become Springfield? And so I think tone and tenor does matter. And everyone's worried about, oh, don't be upset, don't get political rhetoric, all this stuff. No, we need a city, because I'm now a resident, and quite frankly, in 3 or 4 months, I'm just going to be average Joe citizen. So
right.
I'm concerned as a citizen that I don't want Findlay to become Springfield. And so I think, you know, we have to be adults in this situation. We can have tough conversations. We can have tough debates without people worrying about someone getting offended. And in this case, this is about the health and safety of Findlay, Ohio. And as I've always said, even my campaign tagline, Chris, a long time ago, if we're going to make Ohio safer and stronger and open for business, you can't be open for business if we don't have a safe community.
You mentioned that you have spoken with the sheriff. Yep. You have spoken with a number of city council members. Have you spoken to the mayor about this?
No, not directly. Not since we put out the social media posts. Certainly welcome that conversation. And again, this isn't today I'm waking up and going to go pick on the mayor. My concern is I think that I have the same constituency she does. And I think that where we difference is, I hope that the city of Findlay, because it's more than the mayor, right? City council, mm-hmm. our county commissioners, our local government leaders need to be working together to address this issue, not just one particularly mayor. But again, Chris, I've done some research on this. I think people have to understand what is going on here. Why are these folks coming to Findlay, Ohio? Mm-hmm. This is because of a temporary work agency that's bringing these folks into the country through the federal government, what I call a loophole in the law, because it was an executive order. Not a bill, not a piece of legislation, but an executive order signed by the president to allow them temporary status for 18 months. And most importantly,
no.
When that 18 months is up, Chris, that is not a pathway to citizenship. They would have to leave mm-hmm. if Homeland Security right. does not allow them to stay here.
Right, assuming that
happens.
That is not extended.
Oh, right.
Not extended. Although it should be pointed out that the underlying law dates back several decades.
Yeah,
that temporary status.
Yeah, yes, I think even the George Bush administration, they were trying to deal with this.
Yeah, so this is not necessarily a new law per se. It's a new application of the law, which is a new.
Well, it's an executive order.
More countries have been granted that status.
Yes, I guess I'm more sensitive as a member of the legislature.
But here's
I'm sensitive though to people signing executive orders over passing bills.
But given the fact that it is a federal program
yeah.
and that the vast majority, we don't know that they're all here legally, but the vast majority here and in Springfield are there locally or legally as yeah. well, what can actually be done to curb that influx? I mean, you talk about addressing this and making sure. I mean, you can't just round them up and kick them out if they're here legally.
No. So, but again,
voters, which is one of the points that the mayor's making.
Well, two things could happen. First, the citizens have a voice in this. They can elect President Trump, who is probably going to close a lot of these loopholes, or they can elect President Harris, who's going to Vice President Harris, who would maybe keep some of these things in place. Mm-hmm. That is the fundamental decision that voters will have come November. I think that's really important because as a state legislator, our hands are somewhat tied. However, my bigger concern is this is not sustainable. If you bring in 1,000 or 20,000 people to work in our area businesses, mm-hmm. first off, if they're making a full-time wage of $15 to $20 an hour, they're not making that. What I have found out working through temp agencies, the temp agencies take a cut of that money. So now they're stuck with maybe $10 versus the $15 job.
Right.
And that I've always learned as an economic development person that $10 an hour wages does not help grow your economy. It hurts your economy. We don't need more poverty. We don't need more low wages. What's the city doing to address the influx of students in our school, the influx of our hospitals? Mm-hmm. Because as a temp agency staffer, you get no health insurance.
Right.
So people at the hospital, when they're having babies or all these things that are happening, the hospitals are going to be stuck with those bills. So ultimately, Chris, what happens? The taxpayers of Ohio get stuck with the bill because of bad federal immigration policy.
So you also said that you have asked the governor and lieutenant governor visit Finley to learn more about the issue here.
Sure.
What do you hope would come out of that?
Well, more conversations, peeling back the onion. Let's expose what it is. There might be good parts to it, there might be bad parts to it, but this has been in the shadows for a while. And in talking to law enforcement, you know, I've talked to someone from the Attorney General's office who I called, and they're looking to set up a task force to look at labor trafficking. I think that having the governor, lieutenant governor, come here, so our citizens, our members of the community, can have a good conversation. I think that's part of the job as being a state representative is, hey, let's bring some state folks here so local community members can have conversations and say, yeah, this is a problem, or no, this isn't. Here are our concerns. But again, the concerns we're hearing, the legitimate concerns we're hearing, Chris, is now the governor has to go ask for more federal dollars because it's putting a strain on our tax dollars here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. We cannot probably sustain a 20,000-30,000 influx of population like Springfield did. And if the mayor says it's 1,000 to 1,500, what are we doing to say, well, we're not interested in taking any more migrant workers because, again, I don't think it's sustainable. Even if I'm a business who says, well, everything's hunky-dory and I'm working great, 18 months from now, you might lose that workforce. Yeah. And I think businesses have to learn to continue to automate. They have to learn to get competitive. There are a number of businesses in Ohio who are doing it really well by increasing their wages, their benefits. They have to get competitive. It's a competitive marketplace. Let me say this, Chris. I am pretty passionate about this. I'm a pro-business person. Business tells us every day, I want government out of our lives. But then when it comes to workforce, oop, not so fast. We need you now. And so there's been a combination of how do we – we've done in the Trump administration, they've done a great job of near sourcing and bring a lot of businesses back to the United States. But now all of a sudden we have to go outsource our workforce with immigrants from out of the country. It doesn't make sense.
Let me close on this point. And I think this is a salient point. And I think one of the main points that the mayor was trying to get across in the letter that she penned on Friday is to try and make sure that we are not making those individuals in the community scapegoats for the problems that we see in the community. City officials in Springfield have kind of echoed those sentiments, saying that the way this was brought up last week in the debate by President Trump was not helpful. They have seen they have had threats to local government facilities, city facilities, schools. Wittenberg University received some threats that led them to cancel events over the weekend.
And President Trump almost got assassinated again. So again,
but
on both sides of this.
I understand that, but again, it has to stop someplace. Don't we? would you agree that we have to tone the rhetoric down and not blame the officials? Was this, and we asked it of the mayor, we asked it of the state party chair earlier on Friday, was this the best way of bringing up this issue? It is no question that it's an important issue. I think everyone agrees that.
Well, I think my response to the mayor and how I've responded to you in the last 2 minutes is an appropriate way to do it. It's saying, listen, voters have a choice on a broken immigration system, how we want to move forward in this country. Mm-hmm. I have immigrants who have followed the process of getting to this country, living here in Findlay, doing it the right way. But then there are pathways that are bringing people in, maybe illegal, maybe not. Who says that this is a legal pathway, even though the federal government calls it legal? Does it really hold up in the court saying it's legal? There's a lot of debate over this. And I think voters have a choice, number one. Number two, the mayor, the county commissioners, the sheriff, prosecutor, myself, we have a responsibility to keep our community safe for the well-being, no matter who is here, whether it's you, myself, anyone. We're a big family in Findlay. We love everybody. We welcome people here, but you got to follow our laws. We're a nation of laws. You got to respect our culture, how we act here, and that's what we're asking. First thing I'd say is, of all of our hotels where all these Haitians are living, is the city cracking down on how many people can live in the hotel rooms? There are things that we can do to make sure that we are not sending a message that we're going to bend the rules and bend the laws just because a third world country has problems and a mass migration folks are coming to Findlay, Ohio. Findlay is a city of laws, and I think the mayor and the council and the county commissioners, sheriff, prosecutor, the whole bundle needs to do all they can to make sure that we keep Findlay the way we want it to be.
And we will leave it there. Again, State Representative John Cross, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Dateline, Skowhegan, Maine, for our first item in the broken news this morning. A convicted criminal tried to steal a page out of a Mission Impossible movie and attempted to escape the courthouse before he was sentenced. According to this report from the Associated Press, 31-year-old Nicholas Carter, who was found guilty of assault, decided to make a break for it during a hearing, ran out of the building while still in handcuffs. What he didn't count on, and this is what makes the story great, what I loved about this story, is that it was two jurors in the case that chase after him. That's the part he probably didn't count on, that the jurors would track him down. Mr. Carter did actually make it out of the building, but obviously he's not Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible. He eventually fell on his face outside the parking lot as the two jurors and a detective corralled him. I'm guessing that when the judge instructed the jurors on their duties in the case, he didn't actually tell them they'd physically have to chase down and corral the defendant, but these two jurors provided a good example, if that were ever to be added in, I guess, to jury instructions. Chased him down. The jurors chased him down. Tried to escape the courthouse. Kind of a crazy traffic stop in, where is this? It says Clay County, but it doesn't give a Clay County, what state? Anyway, happened earlier this month. Clay County police officers pulled over 23-year-old Derek James Foreman. Oh, Florida. There it is. I kind of figured it had to be Florida, but I didn't see that on the in the story until just now. Deputies in Clay County, Florida, pulled over 23-year-old Derek James Foreman for erratic driving.
That was originally the reason they pulled him over. His driving was so bad, other motorists were actually calling in to report him, according to the sheriff's office. Once they got him pulled over, though, they discovered the reason he was driving so erratically. He had a squirrel in his shirt. He had a squirrel in his shirt. He had a live squirrel underneath his shirt. The squirrel, he said, was biting me, and that's why I was swerving. Oh, he was also given a breathalyzer, and he failed, so he was taken into custody. So there is that. But there was, in fact, a squirrel in his shirt. Better his shirt than his shorts, I suppose. The squirrel was released unharmed, according to the story. I know the cops will say, oh, we've heard all the excuses, but that's got to be a new one. There's a squirrel in my shirt. Yeah. This story went viral online the other day. A server, and this was on TikTok, a server, and I don't know where this is, said that a customer came into a restaurant, ordered an expensive meal. I can see this happening. Came into a restaurant, ordered an expensive meal, and then tried to pay by writing a credit card number on the receipt. Didn't have the card, just wrote a random credit card number on the receipt. The server explained that the guest would need to pay with a physical card, especially after noticing the digits that the customer tried to pay with. The customer just wrote down the credit card number as 12345678910. I don't think that's a real credit card number. I don't know all the credit card numbers there are in the world, but I'm guessing that's not one of them. 12345678910. When the manager came over to try and straighten out the scene, the customer allegedly said, I'm not going to argue. God's got this. And she walked up and left. How crazy is that? God's got this. I'm not going to argue. Wish I could do that. Walk into a restaurant and say, don't worry about the check. God's got this. Wonder if God's a good tipper. And a couple of other items. The broken news this morning. You've heard the old phrase, curiosity killed the cat. Well, not this time, but a 3-year-old tabby cat went missing for 8 weeks after getting trapped in the sewer. This is in Duluth, Minnesota. Happily, the feline, who is ironically named Drifter, has been found and now returned to his home. Clifton Nesseth and Ashley Comstock lost their cat back in mid-July. And after over a month of searching, they started to plan a memorial because they figured, well, the cat's gone. But then they were alerted to the sound of a cat's meow at a local construction site. According to Mr. Nesseth, a little paw shot out of a tear in the fabric that was over, I guess, one of the grates, one of the storm grates. It was a tabby cat paw. They pulled back the fabric a little more, and his head popped through. And sure enough, Drifter, back home, after spending 8 weeks wandering the sewer. Now that he's back home, Drifter is on the way to a full recovery and regaining the weight that he lost during his journey. Mr. Nesseth says we're trying to give him fluids, and he's eating. He's very hungry, and I would guess he is in desperate need of a bath. How crazy is that? 8 weeks lost in the sewer. Glad that story has a happy ending, though. And finally, in the broken news this morning, I love this story. The Ig Nobel Awards have been handed out. The Ig Nobel Awards is a spoof of the Nobel Peace Prize.
recognizes discoveries that first make people laugh and then make them think. It is awarded the Ig Nobel Awards are handed out each year. Let's see here. The science magazine, The Annals of Improbable Research, publishes this annually. And here are some of this year's winners. One study is a World War II effort that involved training pigeons to pilot bombs. Professor, so this is not necessarily recent research. That is old research from World War II. Professor Burris Frederick Skinner received the honor posthumously for his work on Project Pigeon. Other noteworthy studies that were honored, including a French study determining if the hair on people's heads swirls differently in different hemispheres. You know, supposedly water circles the bowl in the opposite direction in Australia, in the southern hemisphere. They wanted to know if hair swirls differently on people's heads in different hemispheres. It doesn't say what they found out, but that was one study. And then there were the American researchers blowing up a bag next to a cat standing on a cow. I have no idea what the purpose of that would be. A coin flipping experiment, and a group of Japanese researchers that won an Ig Nobel Prize for proving that when oxygen is delivered into the rear ends of mice in test subjects, they were able to absorb the oxygen into their bloodstream. As for why making certain animals breathe through their hind end is important, why would you think this is important? The researchers say it could pave the way for a similar method in humans who are having trouble breathing. Although, I'm thinking that if you are going to make that the alternative, I think I'd rather not breathe at all. You know what I mean? If that's my other option, breathing through my butt, I think I'd just rather not breathe at all. Just, no thank you. It's time to go. There you go. That is some of the Ig Nobel winners this year. There you go, a collection of the odd and unusual side of the headlines in today's Broken News Report. And with that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Inclement weather, fog delays, and snow days. We all know what comes next. School delays and closings. When that happens, it's important that you get accurate information. We've got timely and reliable school delay and closing information presented by Blanchard Valley Health System and Chevrolet of Ottawa. The latest school delays and closings on the air at 1330 WFIN 95.5 FM and on demand anytime at WFIN.com.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is a global survey of young adults, millennials, and younger members of Gen Z, which finds 70%, and this is globally, not just in the U.S., but globally, 70% of younger adults say they would rather text than talk to another human being face-to-face. Let's see here. 42% say that it is fine to be on your phone at the dinner table. 42%. 28% say it is acceptable to look at your phone in the middle of a conversation with another human being. This is how ingrained text messaging in our devices has become. 7 in 10 of those in the survey say they sleep with their phone at an arm's distance. And 2/3 say that they bring their phone with them to the bathroom. And if they were to wake up in the middle of the night, more than half will, first thing they do, they wake up in the middle of the night, check for notifications on their phone.
This is how ingrained our digital devices have become in our society now. Does that sound familiar with the young adult that you know? Well, we hear these stories in the news, or hearing them in the news now, about wildfires out west. We typically don't think so much about wildfires in our area, but the fact of the matter is, this is something that can happen anywhere, and just protecting your home against fires in general is important. We are joined this morning by Karen Collins. She is the vice president at American Property Casualty Insurance Association, and Dr. Ann Cope, chief engineer at the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. Karen, I'll start with you. Making sure first and foremost that you are insured properly for, you know, fires, particularly wildfires, that kind of thing. This actually, people might be surprised at how many folks are underinsured or not insured properly.
Yes, we have seen inflation increases in natural disasters and lingering supply chain issues that are definitely increasing costs and creating delays in the recovery. And if you haven't updated your insurance policy recently, you could find that you are uninsured. So how do you prevent that? Our big tip is definitely make sure you're conducting an annual insurance checkup. Go over your key coverage. So call your agent or your insurance company. Talk about those policy limits and coverage annually. Make sure that policy reflects the right square footage and materials of your home. There's also a few extra features that you might consider adding to your policy, like extended replacement cost coverage, which can provide you an additional layer of financial protection when demand and costs spike after those disasters. There's increased ordinance and law coverage, which can give you some extra funding to rebuild your home to newer building codes. We're seeing a lot of green energy codes for like things like solar panels, and also increasing your additional living expenses. All of that can give you some additional cushion in those events of rebuilding.
Yeah, that periodic review is so important. And again, not just in the subject of wildfires, but, you know, just in general, that is certainly good advice. And obviously, with respect to wildfires specifically, probably the first thing we want to make sure is that we try and make our homes more resistant. I mean, being protected is important in case something does happen, but you can actually make your home more resistant to a wildfire. How?
Definitely. You know, we've been doing wildfire research for more than a decade, and lab-proven post-disaster event shown that there are three key things that homeowners can do to significantly reduce their risk. And when I say significant, I'm talking about, you know, cutting it in half by doing these things. So first and foremost, you need to make sure that your roof is a Class A roof. Good news, most Americans have a Class A roof. You need to be worried about this one if you have a wood shake roof. So if you have a wood shake roof, you might want to start saving money to eventually replace that roof and get yourself a Class A roof. Then second, there are a couple of features of your home that you want to check to make sure that they are wildfire resistant. One of them is you want to have 6 inches of non-combustible around the base of the exterior walls. So you're looking for exposed block, exposed concrete, or non-combustible siding in that bottom 6 inches.
Okay.
And then the vents that lead to the attic and the foundation, you want those to be ember resistant. And lastly, you need to make sure that in the 0 to 5 feet right next to your home, you're using non-combustible things.
That I wanted to talk a little bit more about, get into a little bit more detail, because this is something that both homeowners and renters even can do with respect to the landscaping around your home. This can actually be a preventive measure in and of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that landscaping right around your home in that critical 0 to 5 that can make a huge difference. And so this is a new mindset. To be wildfire prepared, people need to move the bushes. Even well-cared for green bushes are sadly little green gas cans right next to your house. So you want to move all of that stuff away from the house, and you want to use things like river rock, pavers, stone, gravel, metal fencing, things that cannot light on fire. That's what you want to have right next to your home.
I can hear some people say, you know, this will, I mean, this is all about curb appeal.
How do we maintain a good curb appeal while also protecting against some of these dangers?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, some people start to scratch their heads and they're like, gosh, you know, what is that going to look like?
Yeah.
And I'm an engineer, so don't ask me. But we we talked to the landscape architects. Yeah. You know, so I reached out to our friends in the landscape architecture field, and there was a design competition done with UC Berkeley and CSAA. There are some great ideas that they have come up with. There's some design winners, and there's plenty of other, you know, who honorable mention in the design at multiple price points. If you're not creative, you know, just go and take a look at those ideas and see what might work at your own home.
Well, there you go. So there are ways that it is possible. And Karen, while we're talking about making sure that your insurance is up to date and you are properly protected, the other thing in terms of recovery, just in case, is, and again, this goes for any number of disasters, creating a home inventory just to make that whole process a little bit easier.
Absolutely. After that loss has happened, it's very challenging to try to think of all the things that you might have lost, particularly after a wildfire, if there's really nothing left. And so if you've already taken those steps to document what's in your home before these losses happen, it makes that process so much smoother and faster to get that settlement. And it's very easy. Go ahead and take your smartphone and just take a video of all your belongings. You can zoom in on some of the more high-end, more pricey items, get maybe some of those serial numbers if you have like a really nice TV or stereo.
Mm-hmm.
Go through drawers, go through your closets, all these kind of unique spaces. And then just make sure that you're describing this and saving the file. You can save it to a cloud folder or email it to yourself. And that way you just have this ready to go if you need it in the event that that loss does happen.
Again, it's not something that we want to think of, but it can happen anywhere. And we're talking specifically about wildfires, but so much of this actually applies to just about any natural disaster. Again, Karen Collins is with us. She is vice president of at American Property Casualty Insurance Association. Dr. Ann Cope is chief engineer at the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety. Where do we get more information?
Yeah, so for wildfire information, you want to go to wildfireprepared.org. Again, that was wildfireprepared.org, and you can find all of those landscaping design contests right there.
If you have some questions on your insurance-related stuff, you can go to www.apci.org/wildfire.
Okay.
Great resources on that site.
Ladies, thank you both for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Stay safe.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning, and thank you for bearing with my vocal issues this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, of course, and again, that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the USDA recently updated national nutrition standards to help put even healthier meals on school menus. Now, health and nutrition advocates are decrying efforts in Congress to weaken those standards. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.